All right, then. Planning Commission work session for November 2nd. We'll go ahead and get started. My name is Ron Barca, Acting Chair of the Clark County Planning Commission. Due to the COVID-19 coronavirus, regular meetings and public hearings for the Planning Commission will be held in a virtual meeting room. This will allow for safe participation of the Commission members, staff, and appropriate members of the public. Members of the public, applicants, and the Planning Commission members have joined as attendees, which means you can see and hear the event if you join via computer or mobile device, or you can just hear the event if you join by phone. Other event participants cannot see you on the video and they cannot hear your audio unless you are acknowledged by the Commission Chair or staff and are unmuted. There will not be any public comment during the work session, but members of the public can watch and can listen. This evening's agenda is planned as follows. And we will call to order. We will first have coordinated water system planning, then housing options, and then we will open it up to the floor for anything else. So let's go ahead and get started with the first item, coordinated water system.
Hello, everyone. This is Mike Salas. I normally, I think sometimes what I get used to is Oliver probably talking before I do, but since I actually have the floor before he started speaking, I'll go ahead and get started. Just to let you guys know, I think I've only met like a couple of you during the time when COVID wasn't COVID. Other than that, I'm looking forward to meeting you guys in person someday in the future. So basically, I'm here to talk to you about the Coordinated Water System Plan Addendum. And basically, the addendum is something that's it's a little bit different than what's in the Coordinated System Plan itself. And so what we want to go through the agenda is the proposed action, the project background, the 2017 boundary adjustment, and then the staff recommendations, and then any questions or comments that you guys may have at the end. The proposed action is to add an addendum to the Coordinated Water System Plan regarding the 2017 interlocal agreement adjusting the water services boundary and the water service shutoff between the cities of Vancouver and Camas. Go to the next slide. As part of the background, the Coordinated Water System Plan is a coordination and collaboration of water systems to cover growth management and identify water service providers, including water service areas, level of service needed, and the local policies that provides water to Clark County. In 2017, an interlocal agreement was entered into by both the City of Vancouver and the City of Camas to approve and approved by the County Council to adjust the service boundary and the water service shutoffs. The Coordinated Water System Plan Public Utility Coordinating Committee determined that an update was not necessary with the exception of including the 2017 agreement in the appendix of the plan. Go ahead and go to the next slide. The little circle there is the boundary adjustment that was made between the cities of Vancouver and Camas. And the next slide shows the area much closer. Here's the boundary adjustment that was done in 2017. between the two cities. Next slide. Coordinated water system plans are reviewed by a public utility coordinating committee every 5 years or sooner if the committee feels that it's necessary as part of the coordinated water system plan process. The county may approve a plan text or policy change only when the amendment complies and is consistent with all the applicable requirements under GMA and the WAC. Go ahead to the next one. Our findings is that the Public Utility Coordinating Committee determined an update of the plan is not necessary, with the exception of the 2017 interlocal agreement between the cities of Vancouver and Camas, and put into the appendix of the coordinated water system plan. The interlocal agreement is consistent with the procedures outlined in the coordinated water system plan, and the proposed addendum is consistent with the goals and policies of the comprehensive growth management plan. So what we're trying to do, just to let you know, staff is not asking for input on the agreement of the coordinated water system plan. What we're hoping is that the staff is simply making and the addendum as part of the interlocal agreement between, as part of the original document, in support of the documentation that can be found in the appendix of the plan itself. So we wanted to make sure that everything is identified and can be found in the plan. Based on that information presented in this report, staff recommends that the Planning Commission forward a recommendation of approval to Clark County Councilors. You guys have any questions or comments?
Yeah, Michael, why don't you tell us what the interlocal agreement actually is, since we are saying we want to put it in the document?
The interlocal agreement was a boundary adjustment between the city of Camas and the city of Vancouver. And the agreement was done back in 2017. This here is that agreement. It's clearly just a formality to put this into the document itself instead of having it somewhere else, so that so just for consistency purposes, the document wasn't, it was a standalone, and now will be a part of the coordinated water system plan itself.
Okay, but why does this affect water? Wait a second. I'm just trying to understand why this affects water. Does that mean that one municipality is serving another municipality as a result of the boundary agreement?
Yes, Planning Commission members, this is Oliver. That is what I wanted to chime in on. This is an agreement between the two cities on who is going to serve the area that Mike showed you earlier, identifying on the map or exhibit whether that area will be served by Camas. If so, then the city of Vancouver is giving that up. And that's why agreement was put together and signed between the two cities. That's what the agreement is. And I think that's what you're asking for.
Yes, that's it. Because otherwise, the interlocal agreement is just, those happen all the time. And why do we choose to put this one in to the coordinated water service is because the jurisdictions are swapping responsibility, is what I'm hearing.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? I can't hear you. I think you're on mute.
Any of the
Thank
other
you.
planning commission members have anything that they would like clarified? Any questions? Let's just have everybody say yes or no at this time, please.
Yeah, Ron, Brian Halpert here. I was muted a minute ago. Just a question for Michael. This agreement is really just that one subdivision shown on the map that's going to now be served by Camas instead of the city of Vancouver because of water pressure deficiencies in that area?
I don't know if it's a deficiency, this is the only change in the boundary adjustment that was done in 2017.
Okay, so it's already in place. The area is already being served by the city of Camas.
Yes, often that's what happens. And in some cases, if the area is also annexed
mm-hmm.
by Camas, and they're the one that was provided water at the time of that development, they will reach some kind of understanding between Vancouver that for the fact that they're serving that area or providing the water services when that developed, that they have to adjust their service boundary.
Real good. Thank you, Michael.
And in the past, we have done this type of amendment due to the fact that sometimes some people claim that water from Camas, due to pressure, is what they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So the two cities will agree as a result of that to adjust their service boundaries.
Thank you.
Welcome, sir.
Any other questions or comments?
This is also just a quick comment. I'm assuming this kind of change has no impact on the actual mechanical waterworks portion, right? This is really a mapping exercise and a change of responsibility.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
This is Chris Cook. Can I chime in?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. You've probably all noticed this, but this interlocal agreement has been in effect now for almost 4 years. So what's happening now is not that you are approving the interlocal agreement, but that it is simply being appended to the coordinated water system plan. And you are approving that as being consistent with growth management, with the county comprehensive plan, with the code, and with the WACs. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
You're welcome.
Any other comments or questions?
Carl, you got anything to add?
No, sorry I'm late. Just started school and football practice just got out a little late. Thanks for taking the meeting, Ron.
No problem. So if there's no other questions or comments, let's conclude this first item and go on to the housing option section.
Good to see you, Carl. Glad you can make it.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you guys for listening.
Okay. I guess we'll start with the presentation for the housing option study and action plan if everyone's ready. Oliver, do you want to start anything off or do you want me to just kind of dive in?
Just go ahead and chime in. I think you got it covered. There's not much I really need to add. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Hi, Planning Commission members. This is Jackie Camp with Community Planning. I'm here with Steve Faust from 3J Consulting, as well as Jenna and Susan, who are other staff that's supporting the Housing Options Study project. We're coming back to you again. We gave you an update back in April of where the project was so far, covering what the consultant team had produced for background information and documentation for the advisory group to review and consider to learn about the study area. And so now we're back before you to give you an update of what they've been doing since April and provide an overview of the process that they've taken so far and reviewing potential strategies that to be considered for the action plan itself. So Steve and I are going to kind of tag team today. As you can see on the agenda here, I'll go over a quick project overview just to remind everyone about the project. We'll talk about the housing action plan objectives, the development of the potential strategies that the advisory group has been reviewing, and how they went about those analysis and where they are with that. Public involvement, which is always a piece to our projects. And then we put these questions in here just so you can kind of think about it while we go through the presentation slides to see if you will have any input or feedback on strategies or anything else, any questions about the advisory group's process so far, direction that they're going in, or anything else you would like to recommend also for our next public engagement activity. So thank you, Sonia. Next slide there. So the purpose of the Housing Options Study and Action Plan is to understand our local housing challenges and identify opportunities to encourage the creation of additional housing types that are affordable to a variety of households within the unincorporated Vancouver urban growth area. This could, could be done through the removal of regulatory barriers and or implementation of other strategies. And we'll be able to share some of those or some ideas about those later. The county's focusing on this area as it is similar to a city where it is an urban area that is served, that has urban services and where various types of housing like duplexes, triplexes, townhouses, condominiums, and multi-family apartments are found. Next slide. So far, the Housing Options Study project has included the stakeholder interviews that we shared with you in April that occurred last summer, where some of you participated in that, along with various other interest groups and community organizations. We had some focus groups with the real estate community. Then there was the housing inventory analysis, the kind of the data background that was done by Echo Northwest, an audit of our county's land use policies, housing policies, zoning and regulations to see, understand the existing regulatory landscape. There was a feasibility pro forma analysis done, some case studies of other jurisdictions that are doing or have done similar housing initiatives to kind of understand how other jurisdictions have tackled these kinds of issues in their communities. And then lastly, the phase that we're currently in is the review of potential strategies. Steve is going to kind of walk you guys through the process that the advisory group has taken for those that walk through those strategies. And Steve, I'll go ahead and pass it over to you.
Thank you, Jackie, and good evening, commissioners. As Jackie said, I'll pick up where she left off. The first thing that the project advisory group did not long after we last met with you was to take all of that information from the different activities that Jackie described and develop some objectives for our housing action plan. Excuse me. The first two have to do with who these strategies, or I should say, what income levels these and types of housing the strategy these strategies should address. The first one talks about meeting the needs of middle-income households, and the second one talks about strategies to support housing that is affordable to low, very low, and extremely low income households. So the first two have to do with income level. The third objective, talks about encouraging a diversity of housing types and tenure. So not only the size of housing, but tenure in terms of rental versus ownership and middle housing and multifamily. The fourth strategy talks about providing housing for a broad range of households that meet, that match the demographics of the county. So different household sizes, students, older adults, disabled community members, and other population groups. And we did note here, while we certainly want to make sure we're providing housing for the broad spectrum of, or the broad range of households in this area of Clark County, we also did note from our data, and I believe I presented this information the last time we were with you, that there's a specific lack of housing for 1 to 2 person households. They're not being served quite as well right now. A lot of the housing production focuses on, you know, 3-bedroom houses and up. And meanwhile, the 1 to 2 person household population is a significant part of Clark County's population. So that's something we just called out in specific. And then finally, the fifth objective is to look at housing options that are in areas that have access to transportation corridors and transit, commercial services, schools and parks, you know, basically meeting households' needs and services, and conversely, supporting the development of those amenities in areas that already have housing. So those are the 5 objectives that we developed in partnership with the PAG and are considering as we develop these strategies. So we can move on to the work that the PAG has been doing to develop strategies. And we have a little diagram here that shows our workflow. So over the past 3 months, June, July, and August of this summer, the PAG met 3 times, 1 time each month, to review a broad range of potential strategies with the idea of getting their review and comment and then eventually narrowing those down. So in September, right now, what we're doing is presenting to you all, to County Council, and I believe earlier today, Jackie and Jenna and Susan presented to the DEAB to report on what we've been doing over the past 3 months. And then staff and the consultant team will begin or are underway in our efforts to take what we heard from the PAG over the summer and revise the broad list of strategies that we have to start to prioritize them and provide more detail and make our way towards recommendations. So from October to December, the PAG will meet 2 more times during that time period. We'll come back to them at their October meeting with this revised list of strategies in some that we will have prioritized or place some initial placement of priorities, and they'll review that. Then we'll come back to Planning Commission and County Council and do our second round of public engagement to get comments on the work of the PAG. And then in December, November or December, depending on holidays and timing, the PAG will meet 1 more time to make their official recommendations. Then in the new year of 2022, we will begin to prepare the final action plan, do our final round of community engagement, and begin the legislative process for adoption.
Can I ask a quick question? This is Matt Swindell.
Sure.
in October through December, you're going to be going out for more public engagement.
Correct.
Are you going to be doing that before you bring it back to Planning Commission?
Correct.
Okay. And is that what type of forums are you looking at doing in that?
Yeah, I don't know that the timing, we figured out the timing exactly, and Jackie can correct me if I'm wrong in that. We haven't figured out the order exactly, but towards the end of this presentation, we do have a few slides on public engagement, and if it's okay, I'll share at that time what we have discussed thus far in terms of the next round of public engagement.
Okay, that's fine.
Great. So this next slide shows we ended up using a framework provided by the Washington Department of Commerce. We took that framework and somewhat tailored it to the needs of Clark County. So you can see these broad categories of A through G are the categories of strategies that we considered. Within each category, there were strategy types and then specific strategies. And if you had a chance to look at the document we provided, there's a large number of strategies. So what we'll do tonight is just go through those strategy types to give you a little flavor of what the PAG has been reviewing over the summer. Next slide. For each strategy type, what we did was provided the PAG with we assessed each of the strategies that we prepared by several criteria, including timeline, short, medium, and long or long term for implementation, by cost, either low cost, medium cost, or high cost, the administrative effort that it would take to implement these various strategies, and then we left space to evaluate the potential impact of these strategies. We did not fill that information out at this time because we wanted to work with the PAG to gauge their take on the potential impact of the various strategies. And the next slide shows we put together for each strategy type a summary table that showed which of the five objectives each strategy was addressing. Again, the timeline, the relative cost, the relative administrative effort. And in our next as part of our next round of revising these strategies, we'll be adding information on the potential impact. And I think this slide is a little redundant, so we can go ahead and move to the next one. So I'm going to walk through the different strategy types and just mention a few of examples for each of the types of strategies that the PAG discussed, so you get an idea of what we've been talking about. So this first category is expanding zoning permissions for housing development, really expanding the overall supply of residential development opportunities and introducing new opportunities. So we looked at things like reducing minimum lot sizes for a range of housing types. We looked at density bonuses for multifamily housing or housing near transit. We looked at permitting mixed use or allowing multifamily residential if minimum densities and design standards are set in commercial zones. So a little flavor of what we looked at there. Next slide. The next category was to modify existing regulatory tools. So looking at things like parking requirements, setbacks and design standards that really impact the feasibility of a project. So we looked at introducing or revising minimum parking requirements, allowing more neighborhood commercial near residential uses, simplifying or revising design standards or ADU standards, protecting manufactured home parks from displacement, and exploring RVs and tiny homes as housing options. I'll mention before we move to the next category that our charge for this project is to develop, bring forth recommendations that can be implemented right away. So we will be, as part of our recommendations, we'll be putting these different strategies into different categories and one of which, obviously the highest priority, is ones that can be implemented through this project. Categories A and B, which are regulatory in nature, will like a lot of those strategies will likely end up in that category where we actually have funding for this project to make code changes and make some of those regulatory changes. Whereas some of the strategies that I'll be discussing going forward here might have a little bit longer implementation time. I'll also note that categories A and B, those regulatory changes, primarily benefit middle housing and potentially multifamily housing, not so much objective number two, which is our low, very low and extremely low income households. Okay, let's go to category C, which is process improvements. So here we looked at strategies to really just streamline processing to make it more predictable and less costly for builders. We talked about the potential to permit. Oh, we didn't get this change, so you can ignore those some of those bullets there, but to permit most residentials through type one rather than a type two process. That's a big one for consideration. To streamline land use, engineering, and building permit reviews for certain types of housing that the county is prioritizing. And also a number of strategies related to education and marketing of different programs and opportunities for homeowners and renters. Go to category D. These are affordable housing incentives, strategies to support multifamily and affordable housing development. Some of the strategies we looked at here included density bonuses for affordable housing and partnerships with, in particular, religious organizations. We also looked at relaxing development regulations or fees for affordable housing, so just various incentives for affordable housing. Next category. So the next category or the next slide is for funding options. These were options for directly funding or subsidizing affordable housing production, including grants, loans, and new revenue generation. For a lot of these, we talked about what the role of the county might be. Sometimes it's receiving and channeling funds, and other times providing direct assistance. So funding from state and federal funds, partnering with private and nonprofit developers, monitoring regulated and unregulated affordable housing over time. These are some of the strategies that the PAG discussed. Let's go to our next category, which is other strategies. These are strategies that didn't neatly fit into the other categories, so we created an other strategies category. Some of the things we talked about were advocating at the legislative level for things like changes to the condominium defect liability law, which impedes a lot of condominium development. Another strategy we talked about was allowing the conversion of existing hotels and motels into permanent housing. So a couple examples of what we talked about under that other strategies category. And then we have one more category, which is really strategies to preserve affordable housing and prevent the displacement of residents. We talked about things like adopting a notice of intent to sell ordinance, where private owners of multifamily housing, affordable housing, would need to post a notice of intent to sell, which would allow the county to and nonprofit developers to see what they can do about preserving that housing. Also giving homeowners time to relocate. We looked at partnering with land trusts. We looked at a number of programs that provide tenant and homeowner protections and assistance, like down payment assistance, renter assistance, foreclosure prevention, and relocation. So that's really the range. And I said there's so many more strategies in the document that you can take a look at. And what we'll be doing next is moving based on the discussions we had with the PAG, revising and then prioritizing into different categories based on their potential impact and their timeline for implementation. So next up, we wanted to talk, as we mentioned, a little bit about public involvement. I'll show you again on the next slide. We are in this middle phase, phase three, where we're developing recommendations. And we had planned and scoped to do three rounds of community engagement. We did the first one around the same time. We had a public open house and online survey about the same time we met with you, along that same time frame. And we had originally intended to do our next round during this month, during September, but we thought that a little more time for us to do this revising and prioritizing would really benefit the public in terms of comprehending and giving them a product that they're able to comment on. So the next slide, getting back to the commissioner's question earlier, this slide shows the full range of possible activities that were identified in the public engagement plan. And I went ahead and highlighted the items that we have used to date and may use again in the future. So we did conduct an online open house, as I mentioned. There were a number of interviews and focus group discussions early in the project, which Jackie described earlier. We did an online questionnaire and phone interviews, as I mentioned, along with those focus groups. There was an informational video that was prepared a few months back. And while we didn't drive this, Commissioner Barca led an effort to do some a tour of with a tiny home manufacturer. So that was another item that that PAG members participated in. As for the next round of community engagement, we're always looking for your ideas on what you think will be most effective. Our plan at this point is twofold. One is to do another online forum and community survey, but we'd also like to do some targeted outreach to groups that we think might not be receiving the information that we've been providing, or who can provide really specific information or experts in the development community that could really benefit the final strategy development. So we've talked about, and Jackie and Jenna presented to the DEAB today, but there are other groups in the housing development world that we might want to reach out to specifically. We also talked about reaching out to the Spanish-speaking community and finding out more about their specific needs. And, you know, again, we're open to doing other kind of one-off targeted outreach to specific interest groups that might benefit the project. So hopefully that answers your question from earlier. That brings us to the end of the presentation and these questions that Jackie introduced earlier. Is there any input or feedback on the potential strategies? Are there any strategies missing? Again, the full list of strategies is in that document we shared. Second, what questions do you have about the project advisory group's direction or process so far? And third, is there anything you would like to recommend to staff regarding the next round of public engagement activities? So we'll hand it back to Commissioner Barca and open it up.
Well, I have a question. This is Matt Swindell. Ron, are you there?
Yeah, go for it, Matt.
Sorry, I was waiting for you, buddy.
Yeah.
I was just from the standpoint of the public outreach and the, you know, I would really like to be notified, or maybe the whole entire planning commission be notified when those type of things are happening. I think you have in the past, but I just want to make sure, can we get notice of when you're going to be reaching out? Because I'd like to be at least an observer watching that participation from the public and from these experts and whatnot, these people that you're wanting to talk to really understand where they're coming from and what they're thinking.
Yeah,
absolutely.
This is Aldo. I just have a little comment about one slide and then a little bit broader question. So back on the slide following the objectives, I think early on in the presentation, you presented that table
Yes.
Which I thought was very helpful. There it is. But when I first saw it, I was wondering why this was here. I think what would help for readability, if we just put example across there.
Sure.
On the presentation in particular, you mean?
Right. You're showing as an example what they'll see coming up next or in detail.
Great. Thanks. That's helpful.
All right. And then if we could move to the slide where you actually had listed your five objectives.
That's up a few slides.
Yeah, I think it's back a few slides. First of all, I have to say to you and to Jackie, this is so comprehensive. This is amazing work that you're doing to take in so much data from so many people to try and distill it down, make it digestible, and use it as a mechanism to drive decisions. You know, hats off to you guys. This is really something. I wanted to look at the objectives. I'm looking at all the groups that you're addressing with this, and they all have some connection with income level. Medium income, low, very low. How low do we go? In other words, do we identify any populations that will not be, where their needs will not be met by this plan?
Jackie, I'll go ahead and make an attempt and then you can jump in if you want.
Sure.
We definitely saw from the data that where the need was, which is why we started at middle and kind of went down. Yeah. You'll see in the strategies that, like I mentioned, those early categories really lend themselves more to that middle income housing, some of the affordable and housing incentives and funding options lend themselves more to those subsidized housing types and those lower incomes. I think, you know, we did not define any level that our strategies would not reach to. I think that will really come through the discussions with the PAG in terms of which strategies are going to have the most impact and can be implemented within a reasonable amount of time and cost. So we did not identify any parameters like that other than the middle and then the lower incomes. But hopefully that comes out through discussion. Jackie?
No, I think you answered that perfectly. That was similar to what I was going to say. So yeah, what we learned from the data was presented to the PAG for their consideration. And right now they're just kind of looking at potential strategies that could accommodate a variety of household incomes with the housing types that would be benefited. So they haven't gotten quite into any kind of specific income range specifically.
Okay. So. All right. The group that comes to my mind, of course, is the homeless. How are they addressed? And if they're not going to be addressed, it would be, I think, wise and transparent to say so, rather than being caught off guard, especially as you take this into the next phase of review and distilling this huge menu of options across all these subjects. I think we just need to be honest with ourselves about what this plan can serve and who it won't be able to serve given the constraints that we're working with. I just wanted to provide that feedback to you guys.
Thanks. I don't know if you have anything to say, Jackie. I agree that we should be really transparent about that. I don't know if at this time, I know at one point we had one or two strategies specifically around shelters potentially, but I think some of those got moved out because maybe that isn't part of what we're trying to accomplish here, Jackie.
Yeah, I would also say is that we're lucky that we do have Kate Budd, who is executive director of the Council for the Homeless on the advisory group.
Good.
She's bringing that perspective of that population into the feedback that's going into these strategies.
Okay, that is very important. At least that they're represented by a single voice. Mm-hmm. So often the homeless are are not even engaged in these kinds of processes, maybe for all kinds of reasons, right? But I'm glad to hear that. That's good.
This is Ron. Let me chime in for just a moment on this question from Aldo as well. I think when we look at the aspects of what's keeping the housing stock down, and in the case of the bottom tiers of any income strata or the aspect of people that are genuinely homeless, we've already seen the amount of subsidy that's required to try and shelter people that are in that condition. And there are several strategies that the PAG has been working on. And in conjunction with the part of the PAG is people representing Vancouver Housing Authority. So there's several strategies that they're working with to try and gain a foothold for those that are unsheltered. It's really a matter of what is already available. It's not a regulatory issue that's preventing us from sheltering those people. It isn't a situation of the idea that the zoning or parking by itself is going to make some kind of extra effort where now the homeless can be addressed. Although I think when we look at the aspect of that portion of the population and the way that they're so vulnerable, it is a different set of criteria that's going to create sheltering for that portion of the population. So some of the things that we did look at, including the aspect of trying to emulate some of the ideas that have come out of community roots, the aspect of tiny home communities, and the idea of being able to take commercial land and co-locate commercial and residential components in there in the same property. That allows us then to try and leverage some opportunities where, depending upon the funding sources, we may very well find that there are nonprofits or HUD money or something that can be used, and at the same time leave a component of the commercial land available for the aspect of revenue generating at the same time. So there are so many strategies that you can do that focus in on a narrow portion of the population. It's really a matter from our group when we looked at it that said, what levers can we pull within the criteria that we showed here that would actually have a significant change? And I would say we did look at a couple, and we tried to get them on the table, but in the case of the homeless, or when you're at the very bottom of the income ladder in that regard, it will still require subsidies to make it work. It isn't a regulatory issue by itself that's going to turn the table. What we tried to do, though, is make it so there was nothing prohibiting people with the funding from being able to come in and exercise that.
Thanks, Rob, for explaining that. It's just good to know that there can be a connection that in some way, shape, or form through a variety of strategies, if not out of this group, through another channel, that we're addressing these needy populations in Clark County.
So other members of the Planning Commission, questions, comments? I don't know whether you've taken the time to look at the document that was provided. I'm going to encourage everybody to pour through the document. I expect when you do that, there would be some questions about something more specific. And I think because we are going to be seeing this again in the December timeframe. There's going to be some ideas that you have that you think are genuinely valid, some that you don't think will really pay out. It'd be nice to hear some thought processes. I'm interested in hearing from Jackie and Steve if you have the opportunity. If not, you can send it later, but the input from the DEEB, I would like to know what they gave you guys.
Yeah, sure. So we did a similar presentation, so kind of high level, Ron. So we didn't get, you know, into details. We also shared the same, you know, list of strategies. So what I asked them at the end was, you know, for them to take a look. And if, you know, if they're interested and have time to provide feedback on, you know, what's there now to the advisory group, it sounds like they're going to work on that. And they have something, they're going to add something to their agenda for their October meeting to kind of hash things through. And then we also offered an opportunity for when the draft recommendations are available, to kind of, you know, use them as a group to go through those as well. So we kind of want to take that first step first and then kind of wait for the draft recommendations. And then we'll work with them on what they would like to do on next steps with engagement with the draft recommendations.
And Jackie, if I may, for those who want to go through that document, it might be a little intimidating because it's a little bit lengthy.
It's huge.
You should know a lot of the information is educational, describing these strategy types. But if you want a more targeted review, you can really just go at the end of each section where there's the actual strategies, 1.2, 1.5, 3. Whatever the case may be, and just look at the specific strategies, and you can get a good flavor as to what the PAG has been specifically reviewing and discussing over the summer.
So I have a question around that. So will it be the PAG's responsibility to go through all of those tables and start synthesizing, doing trade-offs, grouping, categorizing to come back with a reduced list of all those menu options? Is that what will happen next?
Correct. Based on the discussions we had over the summer, Jackie and Jenna and Susan and my team will be making the first run at doing that exact work, kind of taking what we heard from the PAG and doing another round of consolidation and revision and prioritization. We may engage the PAG in over the next 4 to 6 weeks through some sort of online tool or via email, but essentially we're doing that work and then bringing it back to them at their next meeting towards the end of October to have our next bite at the apple.
You're juggling so many variables at one time. So I would hope that you have a tool to help you.
We've got a good team and good staff.
Awesome.
Brian Halbert here, just a quick question about strategies, and this may be in the action plan that I haven't read yet, but will. What would be a strategy for overcoming the inflation and the runaway prices on homes? The way home prices are jumping so fast, what we come up with today may not even still be affordable for even middle income at the rate that the prices are increasing. Is there a bullet point that may help offset what we're seeing in home prices escalating?
I'll answer quickly, and then I would think Commissioner Barker might have some thoughts as well. But there are aspects of home pricing that this project just cannot address, doesn't have the ability to address. And I think Oliver did a good job explaining that to the PAG towards the beginning of the process. Some of the strategies that we are looking at, and a primary strategy, I think, is looking at these smaller housing types and smaller lot sizes and building footprints that, while it doesn't change the price of materials or the market demand, for example, just right-sizing housing. You know, we mentioned those 1 to 2 person households. The market is not meeting the demand of those folks or in terms of right-sizing the product. So that's one strategy that I think addresses what you're talking about. But Commissioner Barker or Jackie might have something else to add.
And that's a good point, Steve, is that if there isn't homes for one and two people, or and those types of homes can be smaller, so there could be more of them, again, making supply more available, driving down, or at least minimizing the price increases.
Jackie, do you have anything to add?
No, please go ahead.
All right, so I think, Brian, that the PAG spent a lot of time in the area that they call middle housing. Mm-hmm. And the townhouse duplex style answer was one in which a lot of people looked at, and the middle income brackets of the county, the demographics showed us that genuinely we had to be under like $350,000 sale pricing for us to be able to have housing that middle section would be able to afford. And so we're trying to come up with criteria, and what obviously stands out is the aspect of single family zoning with lots that are consuming, I'm trying to remember the statistic, but isn't it like 80% of the zoned land is single family dwelling, and they're all putting on houses of three bedroom or larger homes. Mm-hmm. So that was the direction of how we thought that we may be able to take an existing inventory of land and be able to right size it in fashions that would allow us better density and a better return on the square foot utilization of that land. So in a nutshell, I think that's how we're going after that component. The devil is in the details, and you and all the Planning Commission will see the particular regulatory levers that we're going to try and pull to make that happen. But philosophically, I think that is where we're trying to go. And Aldo brought up the fact of the other component of the population that is also genuinely in jeopardy. But that one isn't a market-driven fix. I think we have something that we believe could actually be a viable market-driven fix. And we're trying to make it make sense in that regard.
Thanks, Ron.
So I do.
Anybody else in the Planning Commission?
I have another just quick question, just clarifying here. Now, I believe somebody mentioned that there's no real table right now for quote unquote income and affordable housing, like. What is affordable housing, and what is that income level? Is there a table that's going to come at some point where this is the price, this is your income, this is affordable? Is there anything like that happening?
There's been a lot of talk about the definition of affordable. I can speak to our objectives, which I don't know that we mentioned it in the objectives, but the middle housing, I believe, was generally 80 to 120% of median income, area median income, and then those low and very low and extremely low go from, 50 to 80, 30 to 50, and 0 to 30, I believe. So that's generally speaking what we're talking about when we talk about middle income versus low, very low, and extremely low.
So like I said, is there going to be an actual table that shows income, shows housing prices, and then there's a graph that we can set as the standard?
Actually quantify it.
Yeah, quantify. Sorry, that's a better way to say it.
Yeah, Jackie, go ahead.
Oh yeah, I was just gonna say, we do have something like that in the Echo Northwest, the data analysis report.
Yeah.
So we can We can send that to you, Matt, if that would be helpful. You can let us know if that's what you're thinking, and we can that'll be all part of the action plan.
I think that would be very helpful. I think for everybody to be able to say, okay, this is what Clark County defines as affordable, and this is what we say is what where all the brackets end up, just to put it out there. And then can I ask, and I'm sorry to have you do this, this presentation, this is on the website, right? We have that accessibility of it. Correct. Okay. Just want to make sure I was going to have it. I wanted to go back through it and look at it again. Didn't want to waste anybody's time here. So sure. Thank you.
And I will say that there are now affordable housing affordability or income affordability definitions that have come down from the state that I think are now in state law that the local governments are to use now. So those will be some definitions that you'll see more of.
Okay, a couple of planning commissioners left. Any discussion from Carl or Bryant?
Good, thanks, Ron.
Oh, I like how they're framing the discussion. So I'm just waiting to see a little bit more specifics.
Okay, fair enough. I think we'll just reiterate the fact that there's a lot more data on the planning website, and you can take a look at that. This discussion about affordability is very interesting. If you don't own a home and are trying to buy a home, there's an affordability quotient. If you're just renting, and then it's a matter of how much of your income is consumed in your monthly rental, that's a different affordability discussion. So what we have to do is really consider from ourselves if there is a single affordability and where does it come in the aspect of sheltering the community. So anybody else?
Oliver? If it's on this subject, Planning Commission members, I really don't have anything more to add. I think both Steve and Jackie and Ron Barker, Commissioner Ron Barker, covered it all. This is not a project that will eliminate single family, which is very much preferred by so many. I think the question is going to be what Commissioner Ron Barker was saying earlier. If you look at your community, what are the ranges or the type of housing that we are providing, given the income of your community, what are the ranges that folks can afford? And I think the whole idea is to look at our current landscape to see what options are available or opportunities, whether that is looking at our current zoning, the sizes we allowed within them. And if we don't take any bold action, I don't think we are going to make any difference in when it comes to affordability issues. Some would tell you, well, expand the urban growth boundary on the supply side. It doesn't get you affordable housing. So we've got to look at some other tools to really get to affordability issues. You talked about homeless community. As Ron Barker indicated, that is not something that we can get through the regulatory format. Some of that has to be done through some partnership and subsidies. You can see in some areas now where, whether it's the Vancouver Housing Authority or other entities are converting hotels to provide shelter for those that are not currently housed. So there are a variety of areas where we can make difference, and that is what this project is all about. If you don't have any other issues relating to this topic, I will just get to the PC docket. I think you asked us to pull PC members about moving one or two items to December agenda. And I think that's what we are going to do as soon as we have the item that will move to December. We will send out an updated docket for you to review. So we think we have about four members that would like us to spread things out. I will also say that I didn't know this is in your code, even though I oversee the planning department, but it says you cannot have your meeting past 10 p.m. So give me that. I'm going to help you to move some of this, as you have indicated, move some of the items to December and hopefully keep you to 10 p.m.
I'm really glad to hear you say that, Oliver. My day starts at 5 a.m.
Thank you. Thank you. So four members of the PC wanted to go to December, and we will honor that. But again, one of my staff reminds me that a change was made to the code that says 10 p.m. everybody's burned out.
Yeah.
So I will honor that and make your schedule much, much lighter. The second item I wanted to bring to your attention is that we will continue to have visual meetings until September, after which time we will reassess, and we are following the action of the council. They were supposed to have a hybrid beginning, I think, at the end of August. And as a result of the increase in the COVID number of cases, they do not want to jeopardize bringing folks in here and having them wear masks and so forth and distance. And so they are going to reconsider after September. So we will continue the visual format until such a time where both the council is going to a hybrid and we will follow suit. So those are the two items I wanted to share with the Planning Commission.
Very good.
Okay, that sounds good. And the docket that Sonia has on the screen is the current docket.
Yes.
Yes. However, as you can see, there are no items yet move or particular subject matters moved to the December 2nd and December 16th. So I'm going to be working with staff, giving their workload to see what items needs to move. And then we will update this and send it out again.
Okay, very good. So that was the last item on the agenda?
Yes, on the order.
Yeah, any comments from the Planning Commission? All right, then I'm going to ask for adjournment. And we'll see in October. Or sorry, 2 weeks from now.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for covering, Ron.
No problem, Carl.
Thank you,
Sam.
Mm-hmm.